Bouncing Death Kirk is a weekly Keyforge podcast focused on competitive play. The podcast is hosted by Kata Mode and Kodamarin. The show is here for listeners to gain a better understanding of how to evaluate decks, how to evaluate their own board position, and how to anticipate opponents' decisions. Without further ado, here's this week's episode.
Welcome to another episode of Bouncing Death Kirk. I am Kata Mode, and I'm here with Kodamarin.
How's it going?
And today we're going to be talking about rating systems in Keyforge. So the number one rating system is SAS. There's a couple other smaller ones that people use less often, but for the most part, we'll be referencing SAS specifically in this episode.
A lot of times, people will look at a deck and they say, oh, this is my 88 deck. This is my good one. I pulled a 93. And what we're here to talk about is when those numbers aren't as reliable, when we should be looking at them, and why we think it's a little bit strange to be looking at those numbers in some contexts, right? So the first place that we notice this a lot, besides just in casual conversation, is after tournaments. Whether it's a sealed tournament, an Archon tournament, invariably somebody will come out and say, oh, they won with the 96. Everyone else had no chance. Or on the other hand, oh, their deck was only a 74. How could they win? They must have been a really good player or gotten really lucky.
Or the more common one is at a Vault Tour, someone will say, yeah, you know, I opened up three decks, none of them cracked 76, there was no way I could have made the cut. And at that point, that's where, when I listen to something like that, particularly on the three deck one, I'm like, if you open up three Keyforge decks and you couldn't find one that you could reasonably have a shot to make the cut with, that's on you, not the deck.
You know? Yeah.
Like, at some point, you have to look at your own evaluation system. So this episode, what we're going to talk about is how to understand to use these rating systems, because they're not bad. They provide a lot of useful insight. It's just you have to use it correctly. And if you use them correctly, it can make you a better player. And if you use them incorrectly, you can actually hurt yourself in the long run as far as your player ability goes.
Yeah, so the place to start here is that we don't rate decks in any other card games, right? People rate cards. Every card game does this. Packs come out and people give cards star ratings, 4 out of 5, 5 out of 5, 1 out of 5, on every single card in the set. And, you know, you don't play the 1 out of 5s, you play the 5 out of 5s, right? And then you take as many 4 and 5 out of 5s that fit your colors, you put them in a deck, you support them with some utility, and you move forward and you do well in tournaments. In Keyforge, we don't do that. We don't even talk about how good Grok is, unless it's, you know, we talk about Bait and Switch, we talk about the big cards, but does anyone ever talk about how really good Skirmish Fox is? No, I've never heard of 3 out of 5 star on that one. I haven't.
Yeah, people don't rate cards individually, which is strange. And then, like, we come from a Star Wars background, so cards come in pods of 5. And I remember that when people would try to rate pods in Star Wars, there was raging debate over rating pods. And the reason why is, it'd be like, okay, pods, they tend to be balanced in that the 5 cards come together, and typically there's like one really good card, but the price to pay for the really good card is there's some not as good cards. So overall, it's like you balance it out. But then it's like, okay, well, different decks will have different contexts for when this pod might be better or worse than the sum of the parts, and like giving it like a static rating really rub people the wrong way, because people just understood that there's so much more nuance. And so, like, coming from that into Keyforge is very strange, because like no other game would attempt to say, hey, we're gonna evaluate this 36 card pod and give it like a star rating. That is very strange. You wouldn't try this in any other game, and the only reason you try it in Keyforge is because the game is sold that way, right? You are sold 36 cards at a time.
And I think another reason is when you get 36 cards and you can't change them, and you're comparing it to another set of 36 cards, it's much harder than comparing one apple to one apple. You're comparing, you know, this whole set of cards to another set, or, you know, your whole collection, or a number of ones on eBay or whatever you're looking at, and we need a way to parse out that information. And it's really hard to come down to a number and say, yep, that's a 77. There's a lot of nuance in that.
Yeah, I mean, okay, look, real talk, the easiest way to figure out if two decks are better than the other is being good at evaluating decks, right? It's just being a good player. That's the easiest way to do it. So what people are looking for with these rating systems is they're looking for a way to save the work, right? They're looking for a way for someone to give them the answer, so that way they don't have to figure it out for themselves. So this episode, we're going to tell you, like, I mean, in a lot of ways, our whole show is ways to show you how to figure it out for yourself. But, like, we'll start meta topics on, like, generalized card games, how you make a good deck, and then we'll apply it to KeyForge and then apply it to the rating systems in particular in this episode. So, like, let's just jump from the top. So if you're playing a card game, let's say you're playing Magic, right? And you show somewhat, like, a good Magic player your deck. The first thing that they will do, because your deck's probably going to be bad because you're not experienced in Magic, they're going to pick out a bunch of cards, and they're going to be like, these cards are trash, replace them with better cards.
And I want to even make a slight nuance to that. It's not even that you might not be a bad player, but you're a different player, right? Mm-hmm. If I hand a deck to Daniel, he's going to take cards out and put Doorstep in. If you hand a deck to me, I'm going to take cards out and put Speed Sigil in. Right, we're probably going to take out the same cards, but we're going to put in cards that we think are give different value to the deck.
Yeah, but I think that's step two. So sure. Like step one is they're going to just take out the cards that are bad, because okay. Like the reality is, if you ever played Magic, 90% of the cards, and this is actually true for most card games, there's a couple card games that this is not true, but for the vast majority of card games, like 80 to 90% of the card pool is unplayable. So if you show a good player a deck and it's showing some of that 80 to 90%, they're just going to look and say, look, these cards are bad. Take them out. Replace them with good cards. And that's step one. And this is where I think rating systems actually do a fairly decent job. Like, I think it's not that hard to put a number on Mother and put a different number on Nifilape and say Mother is a 8 out of 10, Nifilape is a 2 out of 10. If you have these in different decks, one deck's going to have 8 points and the other deck's going to have 2, and whatever sort of theoretical rating system you wanted to make. It's the step two that's hard. And the step two is, once you've had a deck with good cards, you now need good cards that work together, because, like, as Kodamron just alluded to, if a player were to show me a deck, a lot of times people, like players that are new to a game, they might figure out what the good cards are. And they say, hey, here's this Magic deck. It has a bunch of good cards. And then you pick out a card and you'd be like, this card does nothing for this deck. Yeah, it's a good card, but it doesn't do anything here. It's just like, why is it here? Like, every card needs to have a purpose. And the step two is finding good cards that work well together.
And in KeyForge, you have to play with those 80% bad cards. You have to play with those bottom of the barrel card pool cards. And it's exactly why throwing stars makes Bad Penny feel okay. KeyForge is doing this thing where, you know, we have to play with these bad cards. Let's try to make a plus out of them, right? Mm-hmm. It's the thing that's going against these rating systems and these decks being super top tier all the time. But it's what gives KeyForge its charm, you know?
Yeah.
In that finding those combos between the bad cards. But as far as the rating systems go, they're are attempts to find those synergies. There are attempts to see these cards work well with each other, but they don't really show off. They don't show it explicitly, and they don't tell the player how to do them, right? Mm-hmm. If I gave a player a deck with those cards, they might not find the combos. They might not find these weird lines where you pull off these synergies with the deck. It's about the how you can look at this deck and how you want to play it, what you're going to try to see in the deck that you can't really get out of these rating systems.
Yeah, it's all about purpose, right? So, like, let's say I were playing a game of the Naruto card game, right? I say, okay, let's sort out, take all the bad cards out, they're gone. Now I got the good cards. But you still have to pick out those good cards. You have to say, okay, I want my deck to do this, or I want my deck to do that. And then you would cherry pick the cards that work towards the common goal of whatever your deck's trying to do. You can't do that in KeyForge. What you can do in KeyForge is you can look at a deck and say, okay, here's the cards that are here. Let me sort out the houses. Let me see where the creatures are. Let me see where the actions are. Let me see what my amber is. And you can try to figure out what's the best path forward for this deck. What does this deck's playstyle want to do? And then once you figure out what the deck's playstyle is, you can then take a second pass at the cards and see, like, okay, is there a card that is rated very high but is actually not that great for this deck? Or is there a card that is actually, like, rated pretty low but makes sense in the context of this deck? I mean, an example that Kodamron just made is, like, okay, Bad Penny's bad. But if you have multiple throwing stars in there, all of a sudden, not so bad anymore. Right? Like, if you have a Life for a Life, Brenn the Fanatic becomes a lot better. Right? So you can find these synergies. Some are super obvious. Some are less obvious. Some of them are, like, one-to-one, but others are more holistic deck construction.
And some of them don't need synergies, right? Shield of Justice is a card that we like to just write off as a potato card in a lot of decks. But if the deck wants to be a racing deck, the score is not going to relate that being a good card, but I would count that as another Amber on card, and I'm fine with that in a deck that's trying to go fast. If it's one but on the other hand, if it's in a board state deck that, I guess that would be okay in a board state deck that wants to fight, but the one Amber dot on the card doesn't do as much value for me as the effect on the card would.
Yeah, and so this is like really the first major point we want to drive home, which is that, like, SAS can theoretically, or any other rating system, theoretically do the first part of the exercise, right? They can say, okay, does this deck have a high concentration of good cards? The second part is up to you. The second part, the rating system is not going to be able to help you out there. You have to actually look at the cards, see what the deck wants to do, or if you're targeting decks online, you need to say, like, okay, what am I looking for out of a deck? What types of cards do I want to see? And you have to be very flexible in what you want, so and see if the deck can morph to your overall vision of what you want it to do. But now let's move to the next part, because, like, while this is looking at some of the more negative parts of the rating system, look at a very positive part, which is that, in particular, if you look at SAS, they have a lot of filtering mechanics in them, right? They have a lot of, like, smaller stats that, while they don't tell the whole story of the deck, if you are correctly targeting a certain playstyle, they can really help you spearhead different types of things that you might be looking for.
One of the better ones is the Amber on cards. They show how many pips a deck has, and that's really great to look at it at a glance, because you can't get that from looking at the deck just without counting. But one deeper than that is there's an expected Amber value, which, you know, is a little bit subjective based on how people want to rate these cards. But if I have a deck that has 10 expected Amber versus a deck that has 20 expected Amber, you can expect the 20 to go a lot faster. And, you know, you can even go a little bit tighter than that. Oh, this deck seemed like it went really fast, but it only had a 23, or it only had an 18. Wow, this one that I have over here with the 29, I never really played it before, but let's see how fast it can go and compare it to the deck that I thought was already really fast.
Yeah, and I think this comes down to confidence, right? So if you gave me two decks, and you said, here's one deck has an SAS of 77, the other one has an SAS of 82. I don't know which deck's better. I don't think that is anywhere close to significant. I mean, even if that deck were like 87, we're going to give it a 10-point difference. That probably doesn't matter that much. But on the other hand, if you said, hey, I'm going to give you a deck like Cody Amber just mentioned, one deck has a 22 expected Amber, and the other deck has a 27 expected Amber, that's actually significant. Like, I have a lot more confidence in these micro stats that you can find there to do what you want to do. Like, if you are trying to race, every single expected Amber matters.
And that doesn't make the deck better. And that's what we're trying to get at. The deck doesn't necessarily work better together. It doesn't have more synergies. It just does that thing better, probably.
And this is where the stats can be a little bit deceiving. You have to know what's in them. But, like, we mentioned, we like expected Amber, because expected Amber is pretty straightforward. It's really hard to fudge that stat. I also generally like the Amber control card, just because sometimes, like, you just need decks with good Amber control. So, like, a lot of times I'll make deck searches on Decks Keyforge where I just specifically will look at, like, Amber control with certain types of cards that I might want in there anyways.
Yeah, and that's kind of, I think the punchline of all of this talk about rating systems is that although you shouldn't be looking at it to judge a deck on a whole, you can use it to target a specific deck that you want to look for, maybe in your own collection or potentially to buy, and say, okay, I want decks that have Brobnar and really high Amber control. What decks do I have that can fill that role, right? Or maybe it'll tell us more about a house in general. Oh, you see, Shadows is going to have a really high A value. What if in the new set Shadows suddenly has a really high power value? Right? Mm-hmm. What is that going to mean about these houses and these decks? And that's kind of where, going back to the top, you take some of the legwork out. It's not being lazy. It's trying to be efficient.
Yeah, and so something to keep in mind. So, like, let's bring this back to, like, say, a Vault Tour, right? So you're at a sealed Vault Tour. They give you three decks. There's a very good chance that all three decks are going to be bad by a rating system. Like, you might just have three decks that don't have very good cards. That is very likely to happen. What is very unlikely to happen is that all three of your decks do nothing. Odds are one of those three decks is going to have a coherent game plan that you could follow, but maybe it's just a not as good version of a game plan as like the Archon equivalent would be, right? So maybe you have a racing deck, but instead of having a card like, say, Poison Wave, you have a card like Throwing Darts, right?
Yeah.
They both get you an amber. It's just one does it a little bit better than the other, right? Or it's like, hey, maybe I have a deck that wants to build a board, and instead of having a Troll, I have a Valder,
right? And maybe you pull a deck that does seem kind of bad, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure that you go to a Vault Tour in AOA in Sealed that just you pull decks with that have no amber control value. If you mm-hmm. were to plug those into decks of Keyforge, they're probably all not great. And that's not the entire game. It is certainly a very important part of competitive Keyforge, but kind of saying that you have no chance and then going afterwards and scanning them all and seeing that they're all bad really is cutting yourself short and saying, you know what, you could have found a way to win with some of these decks and maybe improve your record a little bit. Maybe not win the whole tournament, but do a little bit better. Don't be that guy who afterwards just walks around and says, oh, I lost on deck choice because I didn't have anything over an 80.
Yeah, it's you got to see the forest from the trees, right? And a lot of times, and you'll see this with rares too. Like, I've heard this at multiple Vault Tours that I've been to, where there's like a guy that has a quadruple, routine job deck, and everyone acts like it's like a hopeless mission from that point forward. It's like, yeah. He got four routine jobs. I guess it's over for all of us. It's like, how good's the rest of the deck? Does the rest of the deck do all the things that the routine job wants to do? Or is it just that there's going to be some games where they steal seven amber in one turn and it feels super duper bad?
I'm not afraid of a 96 deck. I'm afraid of a strong player with a strong deck.
Yeah, and I think a really good example of this is at Gen Con. So mm-hmm. in the finals, Dave Cordero, he got up there with a 75 SAS deck. And like, I think this was a case of like how you viewed his deck gives a really good example of whether you have big picture view of this game or small picture view of this game. If you have a small picture view of his game, you just look at the 75 SAS and think, wow, this guy must just be like the best player in the world because he got there with a 75. If you have a big picture view, you look at his actual deck and say, there's some really strong cards in here.
Yep.
My guy has, I think he had like four or five urgents. He had like multiple dust fixies. He had some regrowths. He had a board wipe, which like a board wipe carries extra value in a racing deck.
You can get poison waves.
Yeah, he had Brobnar guys that were pretty big too, so you could actually get away with reaping every now and again. Like that deck was balling.
That deck was fast. It was very good, and he played it not to our the way that we tend to play decks, but he did play well. I've watched his games and I've watched him play. He did play that deck.
And that's the thing. We can squabble over play decisions, but I think if you look at his deck and think that the only reason he got to the finals was because he either was like galaxy braining people on plays or was just super lucky, you're missing the forest from the trees. Like the deck's actually good.
despite the 75.
Yeah, I mean the reason that deck's a 75 is it does have some traditionally bad cards. That's why.
Yeah.
Right? Like it just has a number of cards that are traditionally bad.
And because the rating really system is imperfect.
Yeah. And also, like, here's the thing. The guys that made SAS will tell you that it's imperfect. they will never pretend that their deck, like if you find a deck that's 6 points different in SAS, that it is like 6 points better in some sort of imaginary scale.
Mm-hmm.
What they will tell you is it is a good way to filter out, you know, the good stuff from the bad stuff and just say like, look, there's so many decks we have to look at. I don't have time to read every single deck. I can use this rating system to cut my time in like way down. And like, so for me, like when I'm looking for a deck, it's really useful to go into decks of Keyforge and say, okay, I want a deck with these three cards and also enough amber control to get me by. Or I'm looking for a speed sigil with also enough expected amber to make sure I can actually race and I don't just have the speed sigil helping my opponent more than it helps me, you know? Like, that's where these rating systems really come through and you can really use them to your advantage. But yeah, I think that's really all we have to say about that. You can find us online. We are on Facebook and Twitter. We are at Death Quark for either one of them. From either of our social medias, you can find an invite to our Discord channel. That is the easiest way to communicate with myself or Codammer directly. And lastly, if you want to buy some merchandise and flyer colors at events, we have a merchandise store inside of our Discord channel, the swag section. And lastly, if you want more content, Codameron has his own YouTube channel. Inside of his YouTube channel, you can find lots of content. He streams a lot, but then also we just finished a Vault tour fairly recently. So you can look at a bunch of games that Codameron played in the Seal Triad for
Grand Championships.
Sorry, Grand Championships for Nova. So yeah, tell your friends about the show, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks a bunch.